Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Andrew Sacken Show, which is on 7 days a week, either at 6:30, 8 o'clock, 9:30, or 11 o'clock in the evening, and sometimes 10. But it's on the button every night, and the topics that I talk about in this show are defined in the following respects: literature, English, French, American, and Russian literature, and such writers as Dickens, Tolstoy, Thackeray, and Camus, to give some examples. And I also speak about politics in this show and about political and current events issues. I'm generally conservative, but as a Christian, I have great concern, naturally, for the equal distribution of wealth. Jesus does not want people poor. He wants an equal distribution of wealth to everyone as much as possible. He doesn't want people to be poor, despite what he says about the poor being blessed. He means by that statement that their suffering in this life brings them a reward in the next. He doesn't mean it's good to be poor. I don't think so. And next, I would like to also I speak about theology and biblical revelation on this show, and about politics. And those are the topics I usually hit on the show. And tonight, I've written a book, let me tell you, ladies and gentlemen, called The Parables of Jesus, A Personal Commentary. And I do comment on the parables in this show. And tonight I'll be talking about and trying to understand and interpret the parable of the unjust judge found in Luke chapter 18. Verses 1 to 8. The parables of Jesus, of course, the words of Jesus are very hard to grasp fully since we just have limited human vision, and the parables are particularly in depth, and they serve to warn us about things. And Jesus seeks to tell us what is true and what is valid in the Gospels and in the parables, the 41 parables which I interpret in this book. So let me give you a little bit of my background for you listeners who don't know me. Not that I'm not great. I don't think I'm great, nor do I feel that I'm in a position to say that I am, although many people do, in fact, take that position about themselves. They really do. However, I don't take that position. Now, I am this is a politically incorrect show, meaning we don't engage in political rhetoric, left-wing media lies, political rhetoric, or we don't talk about media lies or left-wing lies or right-wing lies. We talk about truth and honesty and facts as much as possible. We gain these truths and facts, of course, through Holy Scripture, which is the main source, the ultimate source of truth. We also gain these facts through the great books of the past, whether Plato, Aristotle, Euripides, Aeschylus, Thucydides, etc. Those are beginning points of knowledge, which if we know them, our minds are stretched and increased. As Mortimer Adler said in his How to Read a Book, we want to read books that are going to stretch our minds. We are not benefited by reading books that are simple and unhelpful. We want to read books that will stretch our mind, whether Milton's Paradise Lost, whether John Bunyan's Pilgrim's Progress, whether Bonhoeffer, Calvin or Luther or St. Augustine, and of course the St. Paul's epistles. These are the writings that stretch and increase our thinking and bring us to the point that we are able to function properly intellectually. I am a Christian. This is a politically incorrect show, as I said, and I am a Christian, and I'm not about to change that position. I think it's the true faith, and I adhere to Holy Scripture from Genesis to Revelation. I'm not a fundamentalist. I don't see myself as backward. This has been the position of the church for 2,000 years, and it is not backward. It is advanced, actually. far from being wackward, it is bringing us to the point of great advancement in our thinking. I also have adhered to the creeds of the Church, the Athanasian, Nicene, and Apostles' Creed, which are the benchmarks for my intellectual functioning in life. Well, I now want to briefly talk about, I told you I, this is a politically incorrect show. We don't go in for political correctness or lies. We try to get at the truth and get at the facts. That's really what this show is all about. And as I said, I'm a Christian, and the show is a Christian. Although, even though I am a Christian, I welcome all points of view in this show, whether Muslim, whether Hindu, whether Buddhist. I welcome all, and I'm very anxious to dialogue with the other faiths that surround me and understand them and present Christ to them as a human being, not necessarily beating them with words, but giving them a taste of the faith of Christ, which has formed me in my life. As I say, I welcome all faiths. I respect them. I want to talk to them. I want to know about them. I want to understand them. I want to dialogue with them. That's the word I use. I want to dialogue with other faiths in the world so that we can reach an accommodation and understanding of that Jesus is the true God, wherever he may be found. He can be found in the Islamic pantheon. He might be found there. He might be found anywhere. He is available to everybody in any place, everywhere. Next, I run two radio shows, a podcast show and a blog, this blog talk radio show. And these are Christian-oriented shows. And many people from many countries visit these shows, and particularly I'm very pleased to say that my dear Muslim brothers and sisters from Saudi Arabia, in fact, visit my Blog Talk Radio show, as do many Muslim countries visit the podcast show and the Blog Talk Radio show. I welcome them. I'm interested in what they have to say, and I'm very glad that they are willing to listen to a Christian show, even though their faith is not that oriented to it. They're open-minded. They're intelligent. I know an Iranian girl, a philosophy student, who was very, very interested in my Christian books and wished to read them. She's no fool. She's intelligent. Intelligent people, that's how intelligent people function. They don't reject other points of view. They listen to them, consider them, and understand them to the best of their ability. You'd be a fool not to do that. Next, I'm a writer. I've written 10 books, Christian books and legal books. Select Legal Topics, Volume 1 and 2, and Christian books, Essays in the Christian Worldview, Essays in Faith, Culture, Politics, and Philosophy, a book on the parables, and my latest book has been a book on the Psalms, which interprets 150 Psalms in the Bible. I love the book of Psalms. They inspire me. They raise me up. When I want to read something, I want to be raised up, not pulled down by the New York Times and by the New York Post. Those are pull-down places. St. Augustine and St. Paul raise me up on a level that I can gain knowledge and insight. As I said, John Donne said of the Psalms, the great Anglican poet, he said of the Psalms that they are the manna of the church. He was a very great thinker, a very intelligent man. I have his 10 books of his sermons. He's worth every minute of my time to read, and his poetry is fantastic. I cannot recommend him more than reading Donne and reading the Psalms. I read the Psalms in seminary, in Princeton Seminary, in Hebrew. And I, since my Sunday school days, I have memorized the 1st, 2nd, and 23rd Psalm. I wish I had memorized more. They're worth every minute of my time. And I say this to you, ladies and gentlemen, when you read the Psalms in any translation, their greatness comes across, as opposed to a book which is translated, and that translation does not produce the original. In fact, with the Psalms, the translation produces the greatness of the original Hebrew. And the Psalms raise me spiritually to Christ and his voice. He speaks in the Psalms. Jesus speaks to everyone in the Psalms in every way. So that's one book I've written. I'm also writing other books, three books of my blogs, literary, philosophical, and political. Three books of blogs. I'm writing three books. I'm also writing a book on the miracles. I've partially completed it, the miracles in the Bible. I've also planned to write a book on the book of Job, an Edomite, non-Jewish, but it's a very great piece of work. And I ask you, ladies and gentlemen, please listen to this show and follow what I'm saying. Don't be made fools of by this society, which doesn't give you anything to help you in your thinking in the least. I'm writing these books of blogs, three books. I've written one of them books. I'm looking for a publisher. And I'm writing other books on the book of Job, and I also have written three articles on the Syracuse Law Review, which was brought by the United States Supreme Court and many other institutions in the world. It was also brought by the State Department, as well as two Academicus articles published by Academicus, an Urbanian scientific journal. And these have been bought also by the State Department and many, many institutions across the world in America and in Europe and in Asia and Africa. That's as much as background I want to say about myself. And now I'm going to talk about this very wonderful psalm, this wonderful parable, rather. It's in chapter 40 of my book, The Parables of Jesus, a Personal Commentary. It's known as the Parable of the Unjust Judge. It's found in Luke chapter 18, verses 1 to 8. And it says that he told them a parable to the effect they ought always to pray and not lose heart. He said, in a certain city there was a judge who neither feared God nor regarded man. And there was a widow in that city who kept coming to him and saying, "Vindicate me against my adversaries." Why, a while he refused, but after he was, he said to himself, "Though I neither fear God nor regard man, yet because this widow bothers me, I will vindicate her, or she will wear me out by her continual coming." And the Lord said, "Hear what the unrighteous just says, and will not God vindicate his elect who cry to him day and night? Will he delay long over men, over them? I tell you, he will vindicate them speedily. Nevertheless, when the Son of Man comes, will he find faith on earth?" It's a very wonderful parable. It's quite significant. We're told that Jesus and the disciples, he tells them to pray and not lose heart. And he says there was this judge who neither feared, he was not a good person. He didn't fear God or regard man. There was a widow who kept coming to him. You might say praying and saying, "Vindicate me against my adversary." For a while, the judge refused, but afterwards he said to himself, well, he was worn down, just like we wear down when we speak to God in prayer, and he hears us eventually. And the judge said to himself, "Though I neither fear God or regard yet, yet because this widow bothers me, I will vindicate her, to wear me out by our continual coming." Jesus concludes by saying that God will vindicate his elect. Those who cry to him day and night will not delay long over them, but will vindicate them. So Jesus concludes in the analogy to this widow who obtained her he decided to vindicate her. And Jesus concluded by saying that God will vindicate believers who cry to him and anyone who cries to him and will not delay long, but will vindicate them speedily. And then Jesus says, "When the Son of Man will he find faith on earth?" In this parable, a widow brought her case to a single judge. What the case was about, we really don't know. It may have been, for example, about a debt. she importunes in her impoverished condition the judge to render her justice. And the judge finally gives in because of the persistence of the widow in asking him. That's the key. She comes to a judge. We don't know what the case was about. Could have been about a debt. She's poor, and the judge asks judge to give justice. And finally, although the judge initially refuses because of her persistence in asking him, he gives in to the widow. The lesson here, we are told, is that God will hasten to help the elect who cry to him day and night and will save and deliver them. So that God will hear the cries of his people and save and deliver them. Even though at first glance, as with this widow, he refuses, eventually he hears them and will save them. I think the key to this parable is that God wishes us to petition and pray. And if we do so with persistence and faith, he will hear and grant our requests. He wants us to pray. He wants us to communicate with him and petition. And if we do so with persistence and faith, although he may apparently be refusing initially to hear us, he will hear and grant our request. Jesus advises in this parable persistence in prayer, in petitions to God. And he says that if we cry to him day and night, eventually, although he initially may appear to be not granting our requests, he will hear our prayers and grant our request speedily without delay. So God wishes us to pray, to communicate with him. And he tells us in this parable that if we do so, even though we initially may not be granted our request, if we do so with persistence like the widow in faith, he will hear and grant our request. Jesus advises here, the advice Jesus gives here is persistence in our petition like the widow and our prayers. And if we cry to him day and night as this widow did, he will hear our prayers and grant our petitions, even though it appears that he is not doing that. The lesson here is that when the Son of Man comes, where will he find faith on earth? This is not a clear connection with the words of the parable, but the question is, when the Son of Man comes, Jesus asks, will he find faith on earth? This has no clear connection with the parable. Still, it is a legitimate question. Will Jesus find faith on earth when he returns to judge the living and the dead? Will he find faith on earth? What will be found of humankind at the end of time is a great issue. And Jesus lays before us that final question. When he returns, will he find faith? It's a very significant question. It's a legitimate question. It has no clear connection with the parable, but it's a very important question. Jesus says, will he find faith when he returns to judge humanity? What will be found of humanity at the end of time? We don't know. I don't know where I'll be found. Jesus lays before us that final question. When he returns, what will he find? This is the question. This is the question. The million-dollar question that as we look at ourselves and look at the world around us, do we really find faith? That's the issue. He raises this issue. As we look at ourselves and look at the world around us, when Jesus returns, will he really find faith? Will he really, in fact, not find faith, but self-interest, self-involvement, self-love, and outright sin, evil, and degradation? This is the question at the end of this parable. It's a very pressing and legitimate question, and not one to be taken lightly. So the question is, what will he find faith on earth, and what he may find as we look at ourselves and look at the world around us, what do we really find of faith, what he will find? Rather, it would appear as we look around us and as Jesus will look around us, we will find with him self-interest, self-involved, self-love, and outright sin, evil, and degradation. The question at the end of this parable is a very pressing and significant question. And I don't know if I can answer it. I don't know what God's going to find out about me at the end of time. But we do know that he will be a judgment and that he will find, like an x-ray, who we really are. Will he find faith? I think rather he will not find faith, but he'll find self-interest, self-involvement, self-love, and outright sin, evil, and derogation. The question is a very pressing one at the end of this parable. And ladies and gentlemen, I ask you, read this parable in Luke 18:1-8, and read chapter 40 of my book, The Parable of the Unjust Judge. Not that what I say in the book is that great, but more important, I ask you to read and reread and consider the words of Christ in Luke 18:1-8. That's the key to understanding. The key to understanding Jesus is not in a book, but in his words. And those words are very deep and very profound, and they are really largely beyond human understanding. We can only attempt to understand them. I hope you've enjoyed this talk, and I'll be talking again tomorrow night.